Thank you for downloading this episode of the IDNV podcast. I'm one of your co-hosts. My name is Corey, and I'm joined by the other two hosts of this podcast through a Google Plus Hangout.
Hi, it's Andy
and Kurt.
I am in currently in sunny Southern California. Looks very sunny behind me, doesn't it, Phyllis?
It does look nice. You even have an umbrella to shield you from the...
Right. So I'm in the backyard. I am staying...
Is that a green screen?
Yes, yes.
Is this like a Daily Show thing where you're really just in your studio?
Now, see, I'm in a house with four kids and four dogs, and so recording outside in the backyard is a little more quiet than recording inside. And about 20 feet from me over here sits the 405 freeway, which for people not from California, that is the famous O.J. Simpson freeway.
And they sure love to just talk about freeways in general.
They do.
But you got to be careful recording outside because from what I've heard about California is that they know how to party.
Well, yeah, obviously. Look at me. So if you're looking for my usual pristine studio audio quality, you're not going to get it from me tonight. You're probably going to hear all sorts of stuff from this end. So I apologize in advance. So I am in Southern California, and we are doing I'm representing you guys. You'll be there in spirit. A meetup in Southern California. That's Tuesday, a week from tomorrow. Today's Monday when we're recording this. A week from tomorrow at the brewery in Placentia. And the Cubs are playing...
Placentia.
Placentia. Okay.
Cha. Right. Yeah. The game starts at 4:10 Pacific time. The Cubs are playing the Reds, and that is a MLB Network broadcast. So we will be able to watch a game. So we're going to meet at the brewery, and Chris said that there are some other good beer places in that area. So we may kind of hop along or something to different places.
Hop along. I get it.
And then as I am coming back from California, there is a meetup at Coors Field in Denver on Friday the 24th. So if you are in Denver and you're interested in going to that game, the Cubs are not playing. It's the Rockies against the Reds. And so apparently Michael from Colorado said that they have rooftop tickets for sale on their website, the Rockies website, and they're pretty affordable. And the plan is to meet at Falling Rock Tap House. If you're from that area, you probably know where that's at. Michael said it's about a block from the ballpark. So if you're in Southern California or in the Colorado area and you would like to meet up and hang out, and you have any questions, if you need more information than what I just gave you, then you can either email me, Corey, C-O-R-E-Y, at IVNV.com, or you can tweet at IVNV.
Yeah, just hop on over.
Right, right. So Major League Baseball has reached the All-Star break. Man, the first half of the season, it really feels like it's just flown by. I think... especially when you compare it to how miserable and slow the last few, the last number of seasons have been. But doesn't it just seem like this first half just flew by?
Reminds me of a saying about having fun. I can't quite remember exactly how it goes, but I know there's an aphorism or something about that.
Right. So in this episode, we're going to reflect on the first half of the season, and we'll look ahead to the second half, and we're going to look both at the team as a whole and then at some of the individual players. So the Cubs are 47-40 right now. They're 7 games over 500, 8 games behind the Cardinals in the Central Division, and then they hold the second wild card spot. They hold that position by 1 game over the Mets. And So while we are going to look at the individual players here in a bit, Kurt, why don't you kind of tell us how the Cubs got to that record and some of the players that are playing the biggest roles in the success that we've seen so far?
Well, I mean, they got to that record with young talent, I think we all know. So that they
previously, they're a young team?
Yeah, yeah. Younger than the Uge. But they, you know, previously didn't have this kind of firepower on offense. And, you know, while we've seen moments when the offense doesn't particularly perform, like lately, I think they're still in this slump that we've discussed before. They've had their moments. But then you kind of pair it with some pretty decent pitching that hasn't necessarily come from where we expect, sort of. But, you know, I think we all expected Lester to do better than he has. But then there's, you know, Brown and Hendricks. And Hamill, who've really stepped forward and kind of been a really solid three parts of the rotation. So yeah, I mean, it's kind of nice to see a full team highlights. You know, it's not just offense, it's not just pitching, because it seems like they haven't all clicked together. But at least in moments, we're seeing at least one of those parts clicking, and I think that's how they've been able to get to 47 wins. And I think it's easy to look at the 47-40 and say, man, they could have easily been like 10 over, maybe 12 over at the highest, but, you know, they lost some games they shouldn't have. But I think reflecting in this little break, we should all be pretty thrilled with 47-40.
Yeah, to me, like, for some reason, it doesn't feel like the record should be quite that good. Just because it does seem like they haven't very often put together a full team effort.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, I think you're right, Kurt. I mean, it's like they haven't really had games where the pitching's bad and the offense is bad, has been bad. At least one area
of their game, or
one aspect of the Cubs, like, have been clicking at all times. And so we just haven't seen a lot of all of it clicking at the same time. But the Pythagorean record right now, the record that they should have when you look at the number of runs they've scored and the number of runs they've given up, the Pythagorean record is 45-42. So a little bit better than what you would think when you look at the number of runs. But I think pitching is, especially here in the last 2 or 3 weeks, I mean, pitching has just carried him. And if it wasn't for the pitching, this could have been a really ugly end of June and beginning of July.
Yeah, easily.
And the rest of the league should be scared of them putting together a complete game, you know, like complete team efforts going forward. You know, I think it's going to happen more.
Well, and I think you know that the offense is going to come around. Mm-hmm. And so I think it would be a little bit more troublesome if the offense was playing really well and the pitching was awful, because you wouldn't have quite as much hope for the pitching as you do for the offense. So I kind of like being in the position that we're in, knowing, and I don't think the pitching is going to be able to continue this production for the rest of the season. I don't think that's realistic, but I think the offense is capable of scoring a lot more runs than they have.
Well, I mean, let's just say they start scoring more runs for Lester, for example.
Right.
You know, and then maybe one of the other pitchers doesn't pitch as well, but Lester kind of picks it up. I think they could kind of maintain an even keel as far as the pitching goes.
Yeah, like if Hendricks fades and Lester steps up. I have a lot of confidence in Hamill to keep it up. And I think Arrieta can do the same. So I think maybe that's your trade-off. You know, there's still a lot of questions about the number five spot, but if he could keep 1-4 at least decent.
Well, and knowing that they are probably going to add another starter in the mix. So,
but I do think it's a good time to look back at previous records too at this point and kind of, you know, take stock of our improvement. I say our. I kind of don't like it when people do that, but I just did. But in 2014, they were 40-54 for .426 winning percentage. 2013, they were actually 42-51, which wasn't horrible for .452. But keep in mind, they went 24 and like 50 something in the second half, so they were horrible. But And then 2012, they were 33-52 for a .388 winning percentage. So we're looking at a vastly improved team, just above last year, 7-game improvement in the win column. So, yeah, you know, for the people that are really worried and stressed out, like...
And negative already.
Looking at a half, not even halfway season, a 7-game improvement. So that's really impressive to put that together.
Don't you just want to shake the people that are being negative when you hear?
Oh my God!
The numbers put that way.
I'm gonna rant a little bit about fans later, but
okay, good.
It blows me away that like. The Cubs and we, let's be real. We have been so bad. The Cubs have been so bad, and it's like people can't even appreciate what's happening because instantly they've got these totally unrealistic expectations that I'm guessing most of them did not have at the beginning of the season. And man, the negativity is just out of control. I'm having to kind of, I can't. Yeah, I'll vent later. That was just getting warmed up.
A little you're preview.
Text messages at 6 a.m. California time because you've been on Facebook already. And I told my wife, I said, I think Corey might have like a problem. he seeks the pain.
Well, okay, so we know how other people feel about this team, some other people, but what's your guys' overall mood about this 2015 Cubs team halfway through the season now?
I'm pretty thrilled with it, honestly. And I just hold on to the fact that I think that it's just going to get better and better.
Yeah. No, I'm totally with you there because, like, you know, we expected Bryant, obviously, to be here with some delay, and that happened, like, sort of right on schedule. And I think we forget, like, the drama of the early season, too. And then sort of Addison Russell comes out of nowhere, and none of us really expected him to be there yet. And, you know, he isn't blowing things away, but he's playing really well, and he looks like he fits. He's, you know, obviously a really good major league player. So, like, there are some things where we're far enough past to maybe start taking for granted, but, like, we could be here, and Russell isn't even up yet.
Right.
You know, Bryant's not up as long as he has been, you know, so I don't know. I'm pretty happy with the overall first half.
Well, if I could jump in real quick before you talk, Andy. Steve in the chat, he said that he went on record before the season began that the Cubs would finish 86-76, and he thought that was reaching a bit, and he said now they've spoiled him where he doesn't know if he would be happy with, quote-unquote, just 86 wins.
Yeah,
I think that's kind of what some fans have fallen into.
Right.
I think Steve's probably a little, at least he can recognize it.
Right.
But
that's the key, is being able to recognize it, because I totally understand how it's easy to sort of just fall into that trap of all of a sudden your expectations are through the roof.
Right. But I think that there's success. There has to be some level of like realistic optimism, though, because like at this point, what is four? I figured this out, and I don't have it written down actually, but like their current winning percentage would put them at 87 wins. So that's pretty much right on track with what he said, you know, minus a win. But
I think the difference is. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Well, I kind of lost track of what I was going to say. But
I think it's the people that are... Okay, sorry.
Go ahead. I'll let you finish.
No, that's sorry. Go ahead.
What I'm going to say is that...
Let's just keep telling each other to go ahead.
If they don't get to that level of disappointment on my part, but not completely like pulling my hair out. So I think they can do 86, 87 wins, where at the beginning of the season, I probably would have told you you're crazy to say 87, maybe 88. 88 looks like a good shot to take a wild card. And I kind of would have thought that was ceiling, absolute ceiling. And right now they're proving that, well, that's maybe they could do that. So I don't know. Maybe the ceiling's 90 wins and, you know, we're not giving them enough credit.
I still think, though, especially with how this team was built and the direction that it's going, I don't see a reason to get just so upset about this season, because this is still just a progression to what the, you know, what ultimately they plan for this organization, and people living and dying, like, you know, this is not a team that's built for a one and done. This is not a team that's like, okay, we're just pushing all of our chips in and we got to try to pull this off. Like, this literally is just like, hey, let's give these guys a taste of winning. If they get into the playoffs, that's awesome. I would love that. And if they would get into the playoffs, I want to see them win. But I think it's, I don't think you can live and die with it. And I don't think you can be so upset when Dexter Fowler, say, has a hard time hitting a ball. You know, like, I don't think
you can be pissed off when Peralta hits a two-run shot in the ninth. You could be pissed off, but you got to, at some point, you know, days later, you got to move on.
It was kind of a good thing that, like, my wife was home for that, even though she predicted, like, she was like, you know they're going to hit a home run right here. And sure enough, they did.
So it's her fault.
Yeah, oh yeah. But if she was not home, I think I would have definitely lost control of myself a lot more. But I, you know, like, yeah, we've been married 10 years, but I still can't be like just a raving like lunatic for a middle of the season Cubs game. So, but I'll say I've had it, you know, I think this season has been a blast so far, and I've listened to way more games on the radio, or more accurately, I guess the At-Bat app, than I usually do. I used to watch a lot more games, but I'm listening to a lot more. I'm hoping that I get to watch more TV broadcasts here in the second half of the season. A lot of it's just been my schedule and everything, but it's been so much fun. And I can't believe that I haven't been up to a game at Wrigley yet this season. And, you know, obviously I'll be going up with you guys here in about, what, 3 or 4 weeks for our bus trip. And I just can't wait to feel some of that energy in the ballpark that, frankly, has been missing the last few years.
Definitely. Yeah, I'm in that same boat. Pretty much what you said, I could repeat and have it apply completely to me.
So, I guess, Andy, did you have anything you wanted to add before we move on to some of the individual performances?
No, I think you guys have already said it, but it's just so important to maintain that mindset. Just sit back and enjoy the ride this season,
right?
And just enjoy what happens. And like you said, you had to have a short memory. Enjoy the, you know, enjoy the wins, but then forget the losses quickly.
Yeah. Well, I think with looking at some of the individual performances, some good and some bad, I feel like we need to start at Jake Arrieta. and can we just take a second to remember the trade that brought Jake Arrieta to the Cubs? That was Jake Arrieta and Pedro Strop for Scott Feldman and Steve Clevenger.
Wow.
That nailed it.
Yeah, that's just, it's delightful. I love that, like, right after a really good Arrieta start, there's several tweets in my Twitter timeline of people like retweeting the original tweets from that trade and stuff like that. Or Orioles fans saying how glad they were to get rid of Strop. But so here at the All-Star break, Arrieta is third in the National League in WAR, behind only Scherzer and Kershaw. He's got a 2.66 ERA and a 2.60 FIP. And he's just been wonderful. I mean, he's thrown two complete games, one of them a shutout. In half of his games, he's gone seven innings or more, and he's just cruising right now. He had a kind of a rough May, and then he turned it around in June, and so far in July, he's just looked great. And I don't really know what else to say except for,
well, right.
He is so much fun to watch.
To have a guy who's set up to potentially win 20 games, like, we haven't seen a 20 game winner.
Right.
I don't know the number, but it's been a while.
Well, we haven't had an offense that could provide a pitcher with run support for 20 wins. But
I think that would be amazing to see that happen again. Even though it's a pretty meaningless stat, but not totally meaningless, but fairly.
But it's still kind of a benchmark that is kind of nice to see.
But more run support equals Arrieta going to the All-Star game like every year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But by his last start, he doesn't need it because, you know, had they not scored those two runs in the first, he still would have won.
He hit a homer
and then pitches a complete game. It was that last start. Just that was incredible.
It was a thing of beauty.
any players you guys want to kind of
maybe discuss? I think since we talked about Arrieta, let's talk about the ace of the staff, Lester. He's so far, he's batting .029, so he hasn't been very good so far this season. I'm a little disappointed. I expected a lot more out of him. And, maybe that's why Arrieta is losing. Hasn't won as many games as he should have. JK, LOL. Lester has been a little bit of a disappointment, but still, the numbers are okay. It's not like he's been absolutely bunch of sandbags on a cart for this team.
He's not Edwin Jackson.
No, not by any means. The guy does have a 4-8 record, but he has a 3.59 ERA, and also it's worth noting a 3.15 FIP. So there have been those games where there's been those costly mistakes that have really, defensively, that have really kind of blown his chance at getting a win. Some of the other peripheral numbers are pretty good. He's only giving up 2.4 walks per nine. He's striking out 8.9 per nine innings. And he has 12 quality starts this season out of 18 games started. I think that number should be a little bit higher for a guy who's the ace, but recently been very good. And like I said, he doesn't have much to show for the times that he's pitched really well due to lack of run support and some of those defensive miscues. But in the last 14 days, he's had 3 starts. I guess that's also known as July. He has a 1.71 ERA. So I think he'll continue to get sharper here as we go. I think that we're bound to, in a contract like his, have some seasons where might be a little bit down compared to what we expect, but then we'll see some that are better than what we expect, perhaps. So I was looking for muscle flexes, and I looked on an article about him, and it's troubling to me. It really got me down to see how many people are already calling him a bum and stuff like that.
I'll tell you that this season has become my pet peeve, is when people call players bums. That term has become my pet peeve.
Yeah. Oh man.
Which means I should just stop. I'm gonna note that. I should just stop reading things.
You should.
Yeah, like for example, here's one on a comment. His win loss record is what it is because he isn't clutch. # bum.
Oh, jeez. Right. So how do you define a player that is a bum? Like, what makes a player a bum?
Yeah.
I'm asking you.
4-8.
So is it just production? Is that what makes somebody a bum? I would think a bum would be like someone that is not trying.
Yeah.
Like that's
win loss record is the craziest stat.
Mm-hmm. Well, he got a loss when he took a no hitter into the sixth, right? That game he had. Registered the loss.
Yeah.
So you pitch 6 perfect, nearly perfect innings, and then he had a.
And the wheels came off with a Chris Bryant defensive miscue.
Right. And then you get a loss.
Right. Another commenter called him an Ejax signing on steroids.
Oh, man.
What?
I don't get it. I still say, if you want to say that a bum is a player that doesn't try, that, you hear a lot of people refer to Castro as a bum, I don't think you get to the major leagues without having an insane amount of competitiveness. And
certain talent level,
right? And to work hard, it's not all talent. It's so much work to get to that level. And I don't think anybody wakes up, and just goes to the major, like a 23-year-old, I think I'm gonna play baseball and I'll figure it out and go play major league baseball. It's like you have to work so hard. It just drives me. I can't handle that term. It just needs to stop. There's Bleacher bums. Those are the bums.
Yeah.
Bleacher bums. The people on the field are not bums.
I will say he has surprised me a little bit with his intensity and his like seriousness, and everybody else is sort of goofing and having a good time, I think in a positive way, but he's really serious, and like if things go wrong, he's really sort of volatile and kind of
he's a competitor.
Of all the guys that you could call a bum or not a bum, I think he's probably at the bottom of the list.
Well, he's a competitive bum.
Yeah.
Put him in one of those fights.
Well, and I don't remember. I think I was listening to a national broadcast of one of the last games that he pitched. I can't remember who I was listening to, but they kind of said that, like, you know, part of the problem it maybe is that he's putting so much pressure on himself because of the size of his contract, because of being the ace and being brought in at this point, you know, in the organization, that he's maybe putting too much pressure on himself. And I think that's possible.
And then there's the whole, like, you know, history of guys in their early 30s signing big contracts. Like, they usually don't go well. So I think he's trying to break that too. And, that's tough. He doesn't want to. I think of he doesn't want to take all this money and not return on the investment. So,
yeah. Kurt, did you have a player that you kind of singled out yet?
Yeah. So, Bryant. I think we have to talk about him, and certainly offensively, we have to be incredibly pleased. I know, just sort of in remembering early in the season when all the projections came out, like Pakota and Zips, and they came out and everybody was sort of raving about, you know, the projections for rookies just don't go this high, and this is kind of crazy. And so I think we had high expectations, but he's outpacing his numbers in every category, in all of those projections, Steamer, Zips, and Pakota, except for slugging. So offensively, he's right on track. You know, he's hitting .269, .376, .472 for slash. He's got his 12 home runs, 51 RBI. His K rate's under 30, like just under 30, which I think we can all live with. We all knew he would strike out a little bit. And his walk rate is decent at 13.5. And then his BABIP is .369. And his, you know, for BABIP is batting average for balls in play. So basically, you know, when he hits it, how many go for hits, which is 10th best in baseball. So that's a good mark for, like, quality hitters who drive the ball and find gaps. So .369 is pretty good. I think league average is around .300. And he's an all-star. So I don't think offensively we have anything to complain about. He's a lot of fun to watch. He plays hard. The hustle has been amazing. So if we have to look for holes, I think it's definitely on the defensive side. He's been a little shaky at third sometimes. And the fielding seems serviceable. He seems to, you know, he gets to balls okay. But the throwing arm has been pretty erratic. And we've talked about this before. He's got 11 errors so far, and most of those have come from throwing errors. Like, he just is a little, if he gets rushed, seems to kind of lose control on the throwing arm. But none of that really concerns me. I think we've said, you know, we all think probably he projects to be left fielder long term, but for now he's a serviceable third baseman who gives you a ton of offense. So yeah, I think he's awesome. You know.
Leads the team in RBI too, right?
Yeah, I think so. 51, did I say? Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and he's definitely, like, I mean, he's at the top for rookie of the year candidates. So, you know, it's, what else can you say? I mean, he's just been, he has been what we were told he would be.
Yeah, what we hoped he would be.
Yeah.
Well, if I could talk for a few seconds about a player that hasn't been what we hoped he would be, that's Dexter Fowler. I don't think we've seen the best from Fowler so far. He's batting .232, and in 2012 he batted .300. In 2013 it was .363, and last year it was, or I'm sorry, .263, and then last year it was .273. His OBP this season is .308, which is not good enough for a leadoff guy. I think the good news is that I think Fowler will get better this season. The projections, both Zips and Steamer, both project Fowler to improve in the second half of the season. So I think he's, I think he will improve. And I think he's just another contributor, I guess, to kind of this slow offense that we've seen here in the last month. But as I said before, I've seen a lot of Cubs fans really down on Fowler. And I saw fans saying that Fowler needs to be benched until he can figure things out, which seems like an absolutely ridiculous notion to me. I'm not a baseball player, but common sense tells me the best way to get on track during a slump is to get out there and get back on track. I don't know if sitting on a bench because, you know, out of punishment, I don't know if that's a way to help a guy get out of a slump.
You're not sending the Pee Wee kids to the bench.
No, I bat everybody.
I think that's when the coach knowing like what the best motivation for a player is, or what, you know, kind of knowing his players, because I think some guys, you know, something like that might work, you know, to kind of have some time away from just grinding it out.
Or if somebody's like, okay, you're trying too hard.
Sure.
You're trying too hard and you're doing this with your swing, not, you know, you're just getting unlucky. You're just not getting, you know, not getting any base hits. I don't know. I just don't want to, I don't know.
I see what you're saying.
I'm just mad. I'm just irritated with fans, I guess.
Yeah.
Everybody, Corey, wants to talk about.
But then in Sunday's game, in Sunday's game, he went out and went 3-for-4 against the White Sox. So, I mean, that's, you know, the best he's looked in a really long time. And but on the topic of fans, I've been invited to join a lot of Cubs fans Facebook groups and stuff like that. And while I think some are really good, some are really bad. And there are fans out there that just drive me nuts. And the bad thing is, when you join a group on Facebook, you get notifications all the time. So then it's like, oh, what's this? And then you look at it, and then it makes me mad. But and I think it's when I read that stuff, I really appreciate all of our listeners and all the folks that like email and interact with us. I would just like to take a second to thank you all for being so level-headed, and thank you for not being idiots. Like, I'm serious. I go through some of these groups that I belong to, and I, like, for my own well-being, I need to just leave these groups, and that's what I'm going to do. But It's so bad, and I just think we're really lucky to have such good Cubs fans kind of surrounding this podcast, and I really do appreciate it, because I don't think I could do it if our listeners were
dumb.
Thanks. Yeah. But I do want to read an email, and this came from Chris. It's kind of a muscle flex, but it kind of goes along with what I'm saying here. And he said, so this is from Facebook, and someone says, I wonder if a coach will ever be bold enough to have all seven defenders stand at shortstop when Starlin Castro bats. And then a couple comments on there. He's an idiot. They should cut him. Well, I'll just leave it at that one. Like, yes, that's obviously the Cubs should cut him. They should release him and just let someone other team cut him. Yep, that's what you do.
Because it's high school football.
I don't know. And maybe it's that the Cubs have been so unfun to watch for the last few years that those people just haven't been very vocal. And now that the Cubs are more fun to watch, all of these self-proclaimed GMs and experts are coming back into the discussion. I don't know, but it's not good for me. I need to back away. And my way of venting is just to do screenshots and send them to you guys. I don't like get involved. I'm not getting into a discussion or anything. I'm just like, oh, look at this idiot. Oh, screenshot.
I do love the, like, 2 degrees of separation from Corey's Facebook to my my messaging stream. And then I get to laugh more at Corey's reaction than the original person's stupidity.
So, it's a little bit of a good buffer for us. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm just going to send you I'm going to invite you or add you guys to all these really bad Cubs fans groups. I think you already belong to some of the good ones, but there are some bad ones.
I have all my Facebook notifications turned off, so maybe that's what I need to do.
Yeah. Another player that's been part of this team, well, he's part of the team earlier than we expected. That's Addison Russell. And while he's not lighting the world on fire offensively, I've had a lot of fun watching him this season. Like Arrieta, he's on this team because of the intelligence of this front office. And but as far as what he's done this season, he's striking out quite a bit, 31% of the time. The nice thing is I haven't heard many people kind of like really down on Russell, which I think is really good. You know, he's developing and he's learning before our eyes. He's playing a new position and he's only 21 years old. And so I don't think we're going to see Russell come around offensively this year, really. I would kind of expect for it to be more of the same just because he is so young. But while he's not going to contribute a lot to this team, why we are seeing him hit in the nine spot in the lineup, I really like that he's on the team. I like that he's there. And as a fan, I would rather watch Russell learn and progress at the major league level than watch Jonathan Herrera play second base.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
Yeah, and unfortunately, he's got a lot of, you know, this opportunity partly because of the Javier Baez struggling and now injury. But at the same time, I totally agree with what you said that, like, you know, having him up here, he's been sort of quietly rookie consistent. You know, he isn't you know, running away with any numbers, but man, he's really awesome to watch defensively, and then has been really good. I think. In that nine hole where you can put him there and nobody's going to get too upset about it when he really probably isn't a number nine hitter long term, but you can comfortably put him there as a rookie and just sort of say, oh, well, he needs his development and he's taken to it well. He doesn't complain about anything. Yeah, I really like him a lot.
But boy, we sure have seen some flashes of what he can do with his bat too. Mm-hmm. I mean, it hasn't been consistent. But sometimes you're like, dang, he pounded that ball to the opposite field. Or, you know, like the other day he drove one to the wall in right center, you know, for example. So I think that that's going to come along. And I agree.
And he's had some.
No, go ahead. Interrupt. That's cool.
Can I blame it on a delay?
No, I'm just saying, you're right, Corey. It's just been a pleasure just being able to watch him. Kind of learn on the job, and I don't think, like you guys have already said, it doesn't seem that detrimental to what the Cubs are trying to do to have him stashed there in the nine hole and then playing super solid defense.
Yeah, and it seems like he's come up with some pretty timely hitting too,
mm-hmm.
which is definitely helped them in a few games. So, any other players you guys want to discuss?
What about Rizzo, you guys?
Who's that?
You know, he's an all-star. He's starting designated hitter for the NL squad, which, you know, says something about what others in the league think about his abilities. And this is his second all-star appearance. But, the guy is putting together quite a season. He's hitting .298, which, I mean, that's pretty high batting average for a player like him. But the stat that stands out in his slash line is the .413 on-base percentage. The guy finds a way to get on base. He's just just such a presence at the plate. I mean, I can't imagine having to pitch to this guy. And he's been doing it against lefties too, which is impressive. But, you know, another thing is the guy's been hit by a pitch 19 times. And Kurt helped me out in that this is a single season Cubs record. The previous record was 17 by Frank Chance, turned back the clock 1905. And so he's really kind of paying for, I guess, his approach and how close he stands to the plate. But as the Cubs commentators have, you know, talked about, is that's part of the reason for his success, as he's able to basically cover the entire zone really well. He's basically able to get to any pitch, you know, and so He's just been a gamer. He has 16 home runs a season, too, which is halfway to the 32 he hit last season. And once you know it, halfway through the season. So, and he's been really good on defense, only two errors a season at first base for a 997 fielding percentage. And it's kind of fun to look through, you know, some of the stat categories that he is, you know, high on the list among national leaguers. You know, like his on-base percentage is good enough for third in the entire National League. And he's not even a leadoff hitter, you know? I mean, it's just, it's incredible. His OPS ranks him third. His 955 OPS ranks him third in the National League. You know, I could go on and on with just stats where he's near the top.
Well, and I think besides stats, you just have to look at how much he carries the team, or maybe not necessarily carries like on the field, but it just his leadership, I guess, and how much of a role he plays in that way.
Yeah, absolutely. It's kind of hard to think about a guy that young, you know, sort of taking the leadership role of a team, but like he seems to have, you know, we've talked a lot earlier this season about where's the veteran leadership going to come from, but a lot of it I think does come from Rizzo. Which is, like I said, it was weird to say, but
it's hilarious. But he's a 25-year-old, you know, and think about like Bryant and Russell. I mean, he has like quite a bit more experience than those mm-hmm. two guys.
Yeah, and it's nice to see him sort of like come into his own as like he's a legit one of the best first basemen in all of baseball. Which I don't know that I ever expected him to be, you know, when he came from the Padres, and now to like I have 100% confidence that he's going to be a really great first baseman for quite a while. And yeah, I don't know. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah. So do you guys think that there is a particular player that second half success of this team relies on? I mean, my answer is, and I kind of transitioned us to that because I think it's Rizzo.
Yeah. I think if he slumps, it's not going to be good. If he slumps, boy, yeah, I mean, he's had his moments where he's been a little down, but overall, yeah, his numbers have been pretty great offensively. So, yeah, I would agree. I mean, we can count on his glove over there at first, but he does need to keep it up offensively.
Yeah, he seems like a key player. Boy, you know, I think, like we talked about earlier, I think that Lester's going to have to step it up a little bit because some of these pitching performances turned in by perhaps Hamill and Hendricks in particular, I think that he's going to have to pick it up for it all to kind of maintain the even keel of it all, and for the pitching staff to maintain sort of the excellent work that they've done so far as a whole.
Yeah, and I do think, you know, transitioning to my last guy that I'm going to talk about is that Castro. I don't think that the season hinges on him, but a turnaround from Castro could really change things for this offense because his first half has been pretty bad, honestly. I mean, we've been rallying behind him mostly because we think that his treatment's been unfair, and I think we're still right there, but he has not had a good season. Our argument is really just because he's had a bad first half doesn't mean we should all just give up on him and cut him. But yeah, he's only hit .247. His OBP is only .283. His walk rate is 4.2, which, you know, Starlin always has a horrible walk rate, but, when you're not getting on base, you know, and you're not walking, that's tough. His BABIP is really low at .282, and he's just not driving the ball. You know, his ground ball rate is up from last year at 45%. It's up to 57%. And when he's getting these hits, he's just sort of finding holes with little dribblers and ground balls. And this isn't the Starlin Castro that we're used to. So I do think if he can turn it around offensively, which I don't see why he couldn't, it could really change a lot of things for this team and help out a lot. I mean, he's got a lot of improvement to make.
Yeah, and boy, it seems like the All-Star break came along at the right time for him. I mean, maybe, you know, this week off, you know, or a little bit less than a week, I guess, off is, you know, just what the doctor ordered for him.
Yeah, I hope so. And we've seen the mental gaffes like we've talked about too, and I don't think those are going away anytime soon, but yeah, I think he the break will do him good.
Yeah. So looking ahead to the rest of the season, do you guys think that this young team can handle the pressure of a playoff race?
I do, partly because you see them having fun, and I think a lot of people I'm just guessing here, but there are probably some people bothered by the amount of fun they're having out there, and I think it's totally a great thing for a young team like this. It's reflective of Madden style, and I think it's good for them. Like, don't take yourself too seriously. Go out, play baseball, win games, and I think that's only going to help them in a tight race if they get themselves into that.
Yeah, I agree. I think that a lot of it has to do with fun. I think that they look like they're having fun, and I'm not sure that they would feel a lot of pressure in a race down the home stretch. And I think that they could have some weaknesses exposed during that, especially, you know, you look at the series that they had against the Cardinals in St. Louis when they just clearly look overmatched and in over their heads, and I think that could happen. But I think at the same time they could just play dumb, just go out there and score a lot of runs and have fun doing it.
Yeah, because I think if they get into a race or even into the playoffs, they can be dangerous for that reason.
But I think too, I mean, I could easily see their youth working against them a little bit, but the thing is though, I see this team as being for the next, you know, for the foreseeable future, really being playoff contenders. And so I think these players who are really young now are going to rack up a lot of experience here in a hurry. So I could see it going either way. I mean, I think a little bit of lack of experience could be a good thing, but it also could work against them.
Right. Yeah. So my next question is, do you guys think that this team could handle a major injury? And let's not name specific players because we don't want to jinx anything.
That's tough to talk about without, you know, being specific. But I think it could be tough to weather. I think they would especially be more inclined to weather an offensive injury than a arm injury.
Totally agree. Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Is that a rotation injury would be pretty detrimental.
I think there's some infield players that if they got injured, it would have a pretty major effect on this team. I'll just leave it at infielders.
Yeah.
All right. So let me get to some listener emails here. Unless there was anything else you guys wanted to talk about.
Well, let me say one last thing to that last point is that as we go forward, and the Cubs have built, you know, the strong farm system that they've built, I think that, you know, injuries won't be as devastating, you know, in years to come. As I think we'll see them be kind of more like the Cardinals in that way, where there will be a player ready to step in and play at a high level.
Right, and maybe it won't be somebody that. Maybe it won't be a Chris Bryant type, but it could be a player that can just come in and get some timely hitting. And sorry.
Freeway?
Yes, yeah. Get some timely hitting and just do what the Cardinals do. And that is all from organizational depth. And we're seeing the Cubs build a lot of that. So this first email comes from Joseph in Milwaukee. He said, you talked about Castro maybe having attention disorders, and I might have some insight. I played second base for a rather large high school. I have both ADHD and mild hypoglycemia, low blood sugar, which makes it more difficult to focus late in games. I didn't think about it with Castro until now, but I definitely remember getting easily distracted late in games and snapping back right as the ball was pitched or even hit. Like you, I'm not a doctor, so I can't say for certain or make any diagnosis, but I can say that his behavior certainly seems familiar. Another quick note, one thing Castro seems to do late in games is at least make contact. Seems like all of his clutch hits were grounders or dribblers, which is definitely better than a shallow pop or a K strikeout. So yeah, what Joseph is referring to was, I don't remember if it was the last, it was a couple episodes ago, and we got an email from a listener that asked about maybe Castro having attention deficit disorder or something like that. And so, but that's interesting insight from Joseph, I think, that he's saying that what he sees from Castro looks familiar to him. But like I said then, we're not able to.
So it's hard for me to comment.
Right, yeah. The next email here comes from Joel, and he says, I imagine that this has come up on the show before, but can we just take a second to marvel at the fact that Matt Adams placed above Anthony Rizzo in the All-Star voting? I know this isn't out of the blue. The Cardinals have a large fan base, and fans tend to vote for players on their team, but come on. What can we say? I don't hold the Cardinal fan base in high esteem. They're bandwagon fans who never had a reason to jump off. Just ask Rams fans to tell you all about the diehard St. Louis fans. So go ahead, Kurt.
Well, I was just going to say, I don't really know what he's talking. Louis is a small market team, and they get supplemental draft picks. So I don't really, I'm not really sure what he means. All these fans, they need extra help.
Yeah. I can honestly say that I did not really pay much attention to the All-Star voting, so I didn't really know that. Context, I guess. Matt Adams' WAR for this season is 0.0, and Anthony. So he is a replacement level player, and Anthony Rizzo, his WAR is 3.5. So
didn't Matt Adams get injured? I feel like he's out for the season. I could be wrong
on that. Yeah, I don't know. I don't pay attention to.
I'm not gonna type St. Louis Cardinals into my browser to find out.
I did just find something that says, that's my boy. He's ahead of Rizzo, LOL. Adam Bomb.
Oh, no.
But this is just why I hate fan voting. It's so stupid. And I think with the stuff that happened with Royals this year, like, I would hope that this is the last year that they do this kind of stuff. And it's I just don't like it. The last question here comes from Joe, and he says, probably getting way ahead of myself here thinking about the playoffs, but I was wondering who you guys would like to see take the mound in the one-game wild card game if it came to that. I say Arrieta. He's been great.
I'd take Arrieta right now, but we'll see what the second half brings, because I expect more from Lester. So
yeah,
I think in a really clutch situation, it would be hard to go against Lester regardless of win-loss record.
I agree. I would pick Lester.
Well, I hope that they would be in a position to take Lester, but I think if it's right now, I would go with Arrieta.
Yeah.
But I'm hoping by the end of the season that Lester would be the common sense choice. And that's not because Arrieta is not performing well, but just because Lester is that solid.
Yeah.
Yep. So as we wrap things up here, do you guys have any internet muscle? Or Kurt, did you have a scary stat of the week? I'm sorry.
I do. Thanks for almost forgetting me, Corey. In 2015, the Cubs have spent 94 calendar days above 500. That's pretty amazing by itself. But to compare that to 2011 through 2014, they spent a total of 16 days above 500, and that includes 2012 and 2014 never being at or above 500. The best of those years was 2011, where they were 12. There was 12 days. And my numbers could be a little off in actual calendar days, but it's around that 16 to 20 mark versus 94 this year. So if that's not a good illustration of how much better this team is and more consistent, then I'm not sure what else to look at.
That was a good one. That's good. You know, it makes sense to to put a bow on the first half of the season with a good scary stat like that. So do you guys have any internet muscle flexes? I do not have one this week.
I don't either. So it looks like
I have all
Andy.
Yeah. All right. I'm just trying to figure out where to start reading this comment. Okay, so there are two commenters here. The first one says, and this is just the end of his comment, it says, "And don't even bother telling me about his personal record," talking about Lester, "which is always meaningless." Second commenter, "Meaningless similar to your posts being meaningless. You're one of those meaningless wins, rah-rahs. Lester is 4-8 and an overpaid bum at this point."
Oh.
And then the original poster goes on to say, "What is really meaningless is your very own existence, you drooling, mindless child. Your posts have been meaningless here for years now, as is your sad, lowbrow humor that always fails to entertain."
Nice.
I don't know. I kind of I hate it. Like, it got me really upset about what people were saying about Lester. But then I also got a good laugh at this guy calling Lester Loster.
And then you got to sprinkle in a bum reference, so that was good. Oh,
God. Ugh. Okay. I can't say anything. I'm just going to edit myself and keep my mouth shut. See, here, Kurt ends with a great scary stat, and then we got to come in with that. Thanks for ruining the show, Andy.
You're welcome.
All right, well, that does it for this week's episode of the podcast. This podcast was made possible by all of our Patreon contributors. We'd especially like to thank our Hall of Fame level contributors. Patreon helps us pay the podcasting bills, and it helps us keep improving this podcast. You can join the Patreon campaign by going to patreon.com/IVNB. That's patreon.com/IVNB. There may or may not be a midweek episode of the podcast this week. We haven't completely decided yet. Wednesday, we normally record. I'm going to Disneyland, guys. That's how I'm celebrating Rizzo and Bryant being in the All-Star game. I'm going to Disneyland. And I would guess it kind of depends on how Rizzo and Bryant do in the Home Run Derby and All-Star game, whether or not we will record. So, whether we record or not, take a few days off, kind of gear up for an exciting second half of the season here during the All-Star break. I think it's going to be a lot of fun, no matter what happens and how it turns out. I think that interest in the Cubs will continue to grow in the second half of the season. And if you hear people talking about the Cubs, maybe tell them about our podcast. The easiest way to share our podcast is to tell them about it and have them download the free IVNB iOS or Android app. They're in the app stores and, again, completely free. So thank you for downloading this episode, and until next time, go Cubs!